20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Tuesday. I know we had a week off last week because Justice was a little bit under the weather, but we are back. Justice Mosqueda, find him on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com. And of course, usually here Tuesdays on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Justice, great to be back chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I can't complain. Enjoying summer. Going a lot of walks, things of that nature.
Right
there with that, I mean, not doing a whole lot of work, I'll tell you that. Not right now.
Love to hear that. Love to hear that. What's have you been getting the heat wave that everyone else has been getting? We've been 90s here. No, you've been cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like 70s today, got like close to 80. But that's really been it. We got a heat wave earlier in the year.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not dealing with the stuff. I know I have a bunch of friends in like New York and stuff, and they're like, it's like 100 degrees out right now. I was like, good luck to you. Get that AC cranking.
90 and humid or 20 and wind chill.
All right. So this is my logic the whole time.
Okay.
Give me cold. I can put on clothes when it's cold. If it's hot, I'm screwed. I'm assuming we have to be outside.
Because I mean, in general,
whatever on the inside, right? Give me the cold. I could put on clothes. It's much easier to go from cold to normal than from hot to normal. Hot ain't no saving me. I'm sweating through everything.
Fair enough. I'm a big 90 and humid guy. I could take 90 and humid every single day. Would have no problem with it whatsoever. I hate cold. It's absolutely the worst. So I'm definitely 90 and humid all day, every day, but I understand the argument. It's a sane, logical argument for sure. I definitely run cold to begin with. So I just bring on the warmth.
See, I run hot, man. Like it gets probably around 80. I'm leaking. I'm leaking every orifice. Like my eyes are stinging and it's always been like this. It's not just cause I'm a big boy now. When I was half my size,
I can totally understand then. We didn't get a chance to talk last week. Obviously, the week before that was the end of mini camp in Green Bay. There wasn't anything earth shattering that took place at mini camp by any stretch of the imagination. I know it's now a couple weeks ago, but as you were getting the reports in, seeing the tweets, etc., anything that remotely stood out to you of any interest, or was it just basically punting on anything until training camp?
I mean, Golden getting in with the ones this early, I think is at least interesting, right?
Yep.
Trying to work through the units in my brain.
Did you buy into the Bo Melton on defense storyline? How are we feeling about Bo knows defense?
I mean, I don't know a damn thing. All I've seen is the workout clips. I mean, essentially, right? So, until I see him in a tackle football game, I'm not really going to have too strong of an opinion. I have like looked into some stats on like how many times has this actually happened, right? And then also, I don't think we have clarity on like, so if he makes it as a defender, is he still going to be used on offense too?
He
like, are we trying to do the Travis Hunter thing?
Like, yes, he's a wide receiver that is dabbling at corner at the moment. So he is not transitioned from wide receiver to corner. They're flipping him back and forth on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, because I know he's got like the offensive jersey and stuff like that. Like I saw the photos of that. So like that stuff's a little interesting. I get why they're doing it with kind of the logjam at receiver, and Christian is running, you know, not full speed, but he's like cutting on that knee at this point. And that, like, if anyone's ever had a ACL issue, so I had an unhappy triad. I tore three ligaments in my knee and blew out my meniscus. The second time I had a clean ACL tear, which it sounds like what Christian had, right? And you can run full speed on a blown ACL. Like if it's just your ACL, you can run full speed in a straight line. The problem is once you get like in any sort of cutting, things get very unstable very quickly. So the fact that like he's cutting on some of those routes and is doing like double moves, even if it's at 75% speed, whatever it was, that at least looks like a positive sign. If they've cleared him to do that medically, which I assume they have, if he's doing all that, I don't think he's going against doctor's words or anything.
Right.
The offensive line stuff, kind of interesting. Like, I would have thought we would have seen more Morgan sprinkled into this stuff, but if they're really focused on having him be a left tackle, I guess that's of note. Belton, I thought he was going to get kicked into guard almost immediately. That hasn't happened.
Nope.
Defensive side, I mean, the news on the injuries was the big thing for me. Just Kenny Clark being like, yeah, my toe needed surgery. And then LVN being like, my hand was broken for three quarters of the season. It's like, oh, yep. Well, you played without your hands, basically. So that makes a whole lot more sense. And he's getting run with the ones now, right?
Yep.
Like the starting team looks, which I think makes sense. I think we thought that was going to happen after Preston got traded, and it didn't end up manifesting last year. So hopefully he can make his first start since high school this year.
It seems destined to be the case, but you never know at this point, but it certainly seems like it's trending in that direction.
Yeah. Linebacker, not too moved by anything. I mean, I know people were like, Isaiah Simmons is getting looks. I'm like, all right, that's fine. There's injuries happening right now. Like, I'm not far away from Isaiah Simmons actually having an impact on this defense at this point. I still think he's a special teamer. And then in the secondary, I mean, they keep rolling out kind of like the three lineups that we kind of assume are going to be out there, right? Where, Evan Williams, Carrington Valentine, or Javon Bullard. One of them's going to end up on the bench. And then it goes, okay, how do we construct the other five? Nothing too shocking. I'm not. Someone asked me, like, I'll put it this way. If someone in the national media, who's my buddy, asked me and was like, anything important happening at Packers minicamp, probably be like, nah, don't worry about it.
I would agree. Probably the main things happening, and just the Elton situation with the contract, is probably the biggest thing that was happening at minicamp for Green Bay. Outside of that, it was pretty nondescript, pretty easygoing. Outside, of course, of Taylor Algersma's two laser rocket throws and 7-on-7s to Cornelius Johnson for back-to-back touchdowns. But I don't want to fan the flames too much. We'll let that play out in training camp a little bit more, see if we can continue. But he might be the greatest of all time. You wrote a great article recently over on Acme Packing Company. So I got a little bit of play in sort of just football media as well about the status of the second round picks right now, which is very interesting. This is the one round that continues to matter at the moment, because it seems like there are guaranteed questions that are going on. And every year the players that get guaranteed sort of extends a couple picks or two. And it seems to be trying to extend maybe a little bit further this year, but I know you can describe it a little bit better. So kind of go over why these second round picks, including Anthony Belton, remain unsigned at the moment.
Yeah. So Front Street, Shamar Stewart's getting a bunch of pub, right, for not having a signed contract. But just because you haven't signed a contract doesn't mean you can't participate. There are like waivers basically that like you can get a pass that says like in good faith, you have to give me, a contract relative to like what my market is if I practice for you without a deal done.
Sure.
That's something the Bengals haven't done with Shamar Stewart, because Shamar Stewart is arguing about like pretty specific contract language. It's about defaulting on guarantees. So it would be like if he got arrested or something like that, then his guarantees would default. First round picks, fully guaranteed contracts. So he's basically fighting for the ability to have those guarantees no matter what, which is, what players have had in the past. There's another first round pick, Jahdae Barron with the Broncos. He's been practicing with the Broncos. Doesn't seem like it's a big deal, even though he's unsigned. So for perspective there. In the third round, there's three unsigned guys. And then the fourth through seventh combined, it's only five, right?
Yeah.
In the second round, there's 30 unsigned players, Andy.
Yep.
There's 30 unsigned players. So what basically happened here, and this was news when it happened, but I don't think people cared because of like their mind just isn't wired to care about contract details.
Yep.
Immediately after the draft, people are caring about other things. They're watching their seventh rounders talking themselves into how they're going to be Pro Bowlers next year. The Houston Texans came out very quickly, gave Jaden Higgins a fully guaranteed $11.7 million contract.
Yep.
That was the first fully guaranteed contract for a second rounder ever. He was the second pick in the second round. Carson Schlesinger, who was picked the pick ahead of Higgins, also signed a fully guaranteed contract. And then from, you know, the simplest way to think about this, right? The round is 32 picks. The first two picks in that round signed fully guaranteed contracts. Everyone else remains unsigned. And so what's really being argued for these players is guaranteed money. So the next guy who is under contract is Ashton Jaloit, I believe is how you say his name. He was picked 66th, and his contract has $1.5 million in guarantees. So the gulf of these 31 picks, because we're also counting the first pick of the third round,
yep,
and this, you know, 31 unconsecutive unsigned or consecutive unsigned players, right? The gulf between 11.6 and 1.5 is pretty big. Yeah. So everyone wants to argue about this, right? What's happening right now, from what I've been told by people in the league, every player's representation in front of Tyler Shuck thinks Tyler Shuck is going to be able to get a fully guaranteed contract from the New Orleans Saints. I think he was like the seventh pick in the second round. And part of that is just going to be because he's a quarterback. So the argument is going to be every pick ahead of Tyler Shuck and Tyler Shuck should be guaranteed. And then we'll see what the fallout is from, you know, behind them through pick 66, right? These are things that you can argue. These are not things that are part of the NFL's rookie wage scale. I know for, like, people think NFL contracts are super easy for rookies, right? It doesn't the NFL just basically handle that? Not really. The NFL handles cash. The NFL has a cash wage scale for 4 years, right? You can only make X amount of cash. Everything else is up for debate. Guarantees, contract language, some of these protections. Offset money is a big one that you get, whether it's, you know, if the Bengals cut Shamar Stewart. We don't have to use Shamar Stewart because I guess it doesn't make sense since he's not in the contract. If the Packers wanted to cut Matthew Golden after 1 year and another team came in and gave him a contract, would they still have to owe every cent, or would the money that his new team is paying him offset the money that he is owed by the Packers? Essentially, like, can you double dip on salaries, right? Yep. Which is important in the context of rookie deals, because a lot of their money is frankly just coming in the form of a signing bonus, right? Yep. So especially, you know, in the higher ends of the draft and stuff like that. So all these things be argued. And that's why little to no movement in the second round, because everyone's just like, what's going to happen with Shuck? What's going to happen with Shuck? And then once Shuck happens, ball get rolling. And I think it'll happen relatively quick. But, I mean, there's a pretty significant drop off from, again, $11.6 million in guaranteed money and $1.5 million. For perspective, Javon Bullard last year got $3.8 million in guarantees. So we're talking about Higgins getting three times that, right?
Yeah.
So there's a reason why these second round picks are just like sitting and waiting and looking and are like, now's not the time for me to write my name to a deal yet until we figure out what this market is actually going to end up looking like.
Well, and if the Shuck things ends up happening, you know, and he does get guarantees, I would assume sort of make anyone between, you know, pick 34 and Jaden Higgins and Shuck at pick 40 pretty easy, yes, to get done after that, because Eamon Worry, Quishon Judkins, you know, Jonas Savannah, Trayvon Henderson, Luther Burden are all going to argue, all right, well, we are clearly getting guarantees. The guy that got picked after us is getting guaranteed. And then TJ Sanders, the one right after Tyler Shuck, becomes an interesting one. I'm sure TJ Sanders and agents are going to say, we want guarantee, but because the guy before us just got guaranteed. And then, you know, then you have to sort of haggle that one. And then it just goes probably a little bit sliding scale down from there. But that it's going to be a very interesting scenario. And you would think, again, it hopefully just the domino effect happens after that. But I'm sure there's still going to be some haggling back and forth, which could make it interesting. And of course, if it does take time to go from TJ Sanders at 41, and then, you know, each pick after that's a little bit, it takes a little bit of time to figure out. Right now, Anthony Belton's at pick 54. So that one could take a little bit of time after that. So just an interesting dynamic. And I think eventually, years from now, once all of the second round is fully guaranteed and we get to that point, then like the first third rounder is going to be like, all right, it's time for me to get. And it's just, I think, going to probably keep extending out further and further. We'll be right back.
I can tell you probably NFL GMs are pissed at the Houston Texans right now. This is really the only dead period in the NFL calendar from now until the start of training camp. And everyone is just having to haggle and communicate and monitor the second round rookie market.
You know
these guys have families that are like, this is our only vacation.
We don't want Russ Ball to get rusty. He can spend this next month working on Anthony Belton's contract. We got to keep him sharp at all times. We don't know what's going to happen next. So we got a lot of free agents.
He pulled off the Jair pre-June 1 release money type thing that I didn't even know was possible. I was like, so what the heck is happening? And I'm like, did they get him to agree to a 1-year contract just to eat all that money? And that's ended up being what happened. Cause I was like, I don't think there's another mechanic in the NFL.
I don't think so either.
Have you figured out
a single reason as to why they would want to do that? I cannot come up with a single benefit.
Double birds to the fans to say, don't look at our salary cap this year, and saying like, we're not using it. Don't look at it.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make
sense. Because you could roll over the money. I mean, it would be just as easy for next season. It doesn't matter for next season. So it just goes like, why don't you want to use this? Why don't you want the cap flexibility this year? And it's like, so you don't look at it, I guess. I know people have. I know people have made the case for like they just want clean book. The books were going to be the same next year anyway.
No matter what, it's the exact same.
So I don't know.
The closest cap I got to anyone. Roll over. The closest I got to anyone at least having a theory on it was there was the stuff from the NFL recently that they want to maybe close some loopholes on contract stuff. So like, but I can't imagine that they're just all
that's
of a sudden
the next CBA. CBA thing. There's no way they're not.
There's no way out of nowhere they're going to be like, oh, by the way, can't carry over cap anymore. Like that would be a nightmare situation. So there's
no.
I get it. They could cap even capping it seems ridiculous. So I cannot come up with a single solitary reason. Like, listen, they went out of their way to do this. So they have to have something somewhere that was slightly advantageous to do this. I just can't find it for the life of me, but it's probably out there. I don't know. If I ever get to see Russ Ball, I'm going to demand he tell me why. It's bothering me too much because I don't get it, but it doesn't matter. I mean, at the end of the day, they have enough cap space where there's no downside in doing it. I just can't find the upside in doing it. But go ahead.
If anything, it would like your short-term cap flexibility, but this team was never going to be a team. Like they're not pumping this.
They couldn't
team.
Spend they're, it anyway.
They're pumping next year. They're pumping years after that when they have the Jordan cap hit. And that's probably how they're going to do it. I mean, they're probably going to just keep stretching out Jordan Love's cap hit and then treat everything else as business as usual. And then I'm sure fans will be like, what do you mean we mortgaged the future for this team? We didn't go out and sign a million free agents and do a bunch of trades. It's like, that's not what all in looks like at the NFL anymore. It's being able to retain your own guys.
More often than not, I would agree. What did you think of Goody's comments on Cheesehead TV that he doesn't believe in opening windows or championship windows? Did you see that? I don't know if you saw that or not.
Didn't see it. He's lying. Like, I mean, I'm sure it's a, like, I don't want to set unfit expectations type thing, but, when you look at the cash spending and how much they leverage the cap and stuff like that, the differences on a year-to-year basis, I mean, they're pretty aware of where their team is at. They burned a whole lot of assets at the end of the Rodgers run, and you can't tell me that's not because they realized there was a window and that that window was eventually going to be closing because Rodgers at some point was going to get old. So I don't buy it. If he was like, yeah, there's not a lot of urgency to do that right now, I'd believe him. But for him to say like, yeah, there's no such thing as a window, it's like, all right, okay. You didn't want to get put on a graphic.
I love this about you because I am a sucker. I will readily admit it. I hear this and I'm like, oh, okay. Like he doesn't believe it. And you're totally just like completely skeptic. And I think you're right. Probably in this.
They lie to us a decent amount, Andy.
They do.
When hot mics are around, they'll lie to us.
I totally know that. And at this, like I say all the time, it's part of his job description is to lie. I've said it on numerous occasions. Yet at the same time, I still take him at face value on certain things. And I don't know why I do it just because I don't know. I guess I just do. But that's on me. I'll take the L on that one. But it is funny. I am just, I believe people probably way too often. Definitely a flaw of mine. I'll have to go and we'll go back and look at the tape and make corrections where we can. There was the rumor from the foremost NFL rumor knower of Ricky, saying that I know, gotta love Ricky, that Rashid Walker was working on a contract extension with Green Bay. My working theory on this is that Ricky got word that there was a potential contract in play for Walker and assumed that it was Rashid, but it was actually Quay. That's my working theory on this. But regardless, what would you say if we found out that the Packers were actually extending Rashid Walker and how would that affect things moving forward?
First of all, we're talking about a guy with a Twitter account who has a dog avatar. He's wearing sunglasses and a hat, an NFL hat.
The foremost expert.
He's been, I have to give him credit. He's been right and ahead of a lot of people.
Yep.
That point about the two Walkers is funny because I hadn't thought of that until, so I got an article up this morning on the Rashid Walker extension. I hadn't heard that until Sam in the APC Slack was like, what if he thought it was like the wrong Walker? And I was like, you know what? That would make a lot more sense. And
it really would.
I hadn't thought of that before. If Rashid Walker gets an extension, what a weird offensive line composition. Not just for this year, but like moving forward, right? Like, yeah. So it'd probably be Walker at left tackle, Banks at left guard. I'm assuming if you're extending Walker, Elton's gone. So like,
You would think so.
Dude, are you paying Tom?
And then moving him to center?
And then playing Belton at right guard and then Jordan Morgan at right tackle?
Or Morgan like, at right guard and Belton at right tackle. Yeah, one right, of the two.
Like, something's got to happen. Yeah, so I looked at sort of like what he'd probably get contract-wise. From a pass protection standpoint, he's like an average pass-blocking left tackle in the NFL. People talk a lot about like the splits between left tackle and right tackle. A lot of times I think it's overrated. Some of that Agreed. Comes from me being a Packers fan and being like, you can just move these guys around. I don't understand why everyone has an issue with it. We seem to be doing pretty fine with just moving guys around.
Fine.
Yeah. With that being said, like if you look at Pro Football Focus's grades, Rashid is like, I think like 20th in like pass protection or something like that among like qualifying tackles over the last 2 years, left tackle specifically. If you move him to right tackle, his numbers are he'd be like the third best pass protector at right tackle, right? From PFF's grades.
Sure.
So there will be a market for him in the same way that there was a market for Dan Moore. We've talked about this before where cap is going up $25 million a year, right? Teams are able to re-sign all of their own players. Because of that, stars aren't going to the market. Teams have big free agency bucks like the New England Patriots this past year and all that stuff, right? How do they have to spend it? They spend it on mid-level starters, you know, non-Pro Bowl guys, and that's where we're seeing the biggest growth, right? Guys coming off of rookie contracts who are in that 25-year-old, 26-year-old range, right, who are non-Pro Bowlers, those are the people who are seeing the biggest gains. It's why Keyshawn Nixon signed 2 years ago in free agency, He signed with the Packers on, I think it was a $6 million per year contract. That was top five for a nickel cornerback last year, just last year. This year we got Nate Hobbs. Everyone in the NFL thinks that Nate Hobbs deal was basically a contract for a nickel cornerback, and we've seen the market rise since then. That kind of alludes that he was kind of the gap that bridged in between two guys. Those guys being Jordan Lewis, who made $10 million a year. Nate Hobbs made 12. And then they had the two guys like right after the draft who signed, and it was like 13.6 or something like that. I don't think that the nickel cornerback market rose 30-whatever percent overnight. I think they viewed that Nate Hobbs deal as kind of the bridge, and the people I've talked to in the league and stuff like that believe that also. So these guys are the guys who are getting money. Now, if you haven't heard Dan Moore was the league leader in sacks allowed last year, was the starting left tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think people are like, he's okay. He'll start for you somewhere, whether it's left tackle, right tackle. There are certainly worse starters you can have than him. No one is mistaking this guy for anything close to a Pro Bowl caliber tackle. Dan Moore signed for $82 million.
Yes, he did. We've talked about this on here quite a bit, and he's worse than Rashid Walker, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's not just the pass blocking numbers, because I know some, honestly, the sack numbers kind of get skewed a little bit just because who he had at quarterback. Russell Wilson is going to take some sacks. He's going to hold on to the ball. But yeah, I mean, if they pay him really like any offensive lineman, or I guess offensive tackle, like you're going to be one of the top four highest paid players on this team. Jordan Love is making 55. Rashawn Gary's making 24. Kenny Clark is making 21.3. And Moore's contract is, let me do the math, 20 and a half. So you're making north of Aaron Banks, who's making 19, by the way. Elgton Jenkins is making 17 and wants more to play center, right? So to keep a veteran offensive line together, you're going to have to pay a whole lot of money, which is why I was like, oh, okay, getting in front of it with Belton and Jordan Morgan makes a lot of sense. But then and then you're going to pay Walker, and then you're going to pay Tom? Like, it just doesn't make sense in terms of asset management, which is why I think, you know, maybe the dog avatar with the shades and the hat guy getting a text that says, hey, Walker's about to get a deal in Green Bay, and he gets the wrong Walker, makes a little bit more sense to me.
Than could easily be the case. Rashid.
Especially the since they're rotating Rashid in and out of left, playing Rashid anywhere else in the game, correct?
There's not even a guarantee. Yeah, Morgan's been in there. Now, I think Walker's been a little bit, I don't know. I'd have to think back if Walker was a little bit banged up or not, but either, I think he was. And I think Morgan got in there at that point, but I still think Morgan was going to get reps there anyway. But yeah, there's no guarantee that Walker's even the starter at left tackle this year. The only thing I can think of is if they like had that preliminary conversation just to be like, what if he accepted like 3 or 36, which I can't imagine him or his agent being like, okay, we'll do it. Like, what if he accepted, like, would you just have to, like, be like, yeah, okay, we'll do it, because it's, like, way, way, way below market value. Yeah, and then you'll
move money around. Yeah, but,
yeah,
and I mean, that stuff too, man, like, you don't really want, well, if you trade him, you can do whatever, but you don't really, people have, like, a very, like, extract value from contract mentality with the NFL. That doesn't work anymore, man, because these guys will hold out. Like, true. The Trey Hendrickson thing, like, he signs a bad contract with Cincinnati and you're like, dude, we got him, and now every year you're having to go back to the negotiating table and give him more money so he even comes on the field with you. We're seeing it with Elgton Jenkins right now, who didn't even sign a bad contract. It was just like the guard market kind of, or interior offensive line contracts just kind of exploded.
And the Packers paid one of them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and he's having to look at a guy, and he's like, I know I'm better than you, and you're making $2 million per more than me, and the Packers can cut me no repercussions next year. Yeah, so I kind of understand his point. I don't think that he's going to get a new deal, but I at least understand where he's coming from. You don't want guys on bad contracts. Like, Danielle Hunter was a guy like that with Minnesota. I could not believe the contract that he signed there. We all saw the drama that happened there several times, right? And then he ends up getting traded. Like, you know, you can maybe fearmonger Rashid Walker into, like, sign this deal right now. There's a possibility you'll get hurt. There's a possibility you'll get replaced, all this stuff. But then you better be prepared to renegotiate that contract when he's bitching and moaning about it next year. Because we're on a year-by-year basis on those type of things. Like, that's kind of how that's worked out in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. It's hard to get outside of the rookie contracts, which, again, are pure gold in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get good value on a contract because, again, as soon as it happens, the player just wants that renegotiation, as you mentioned. So that's a good point. Yeah, I kind of am taking more of the I'll believe it when I see it when it comes to Rashid and getting any sort of extension. They can find one that makes sense for the team. Great. I never am going to be mad at having more offensive linemen. I think it's always good, you know, to have as many good offensive linemen as you can have. But yeah, from an asset resource management standpoint and just figuring out the logistics of it, it doesn't make a ton of sense on the surface unless you're moving on from Zach Tom. And I would not be a huge proponent of that particular move.
No, unless you just like, the difference between whatever the top of the right tackle market is right now and the 20 and a half that I assume Rashid is going to get if he ends up starting this year and even hitting free agency or anything like that, right? I could see you being like, yeah, an offensive lineman isn't worth that much money. Tom is asking for that much. We'll just move on. But the alternative isn't pay an average left tackle $20 million a year. I don't think that's a viable alternative. So
I think you're right. I think you're very right. I have a fun one for you. This is, I just want to get your gut reaction to this one. So there are 11 sort of interesting free agents coming up this next year. Rashid Walker, Kingsley Enagbare, Zach Tom, Romeo Doubs, Matt Orzech, the long snapper, got to put him in there. Zane Anderson, Sean Ryan, Malik Willis, Christian Watson, Devontae Wyatt. Actually, Devontae Wyatt's not anymore, right? He picked up the option, so we're good on that.
He got one more year.
Yep, and then Quay Walker would be the 10th. So Rashid, Enagbare, Zach Tom, Romeo Doubs, Matt Orzech, Zane Anderson, Sean Ryan, Malik Willis, Christian Watson, and Quay Walker are the 10. I want you to rank them from 1 to 10 in order of most importance this upcoming offseason right now. From most to least.
Send their names in the chat so that I can see them.
All right, I'm going to do that right now. So we have it in the chat. So you
One is Tom. I can tell you that. One is Tom. Yeah.
Oh, I have to do it. You got to get Tom. Private chat here. There we go. There's your list. So all one right. is Zach Tom. We got Zach Tom established as number one.
Okay. Then let's go groups. Let's go. Starters you actually want to lock down, because I don't know if Rashid is in that group.
It gets really interesting very fast.
I think Quay's in that group. I think Quay is two.
Okay.
So I think it's Tom, Quay, and then we're talking about Kingsley Enagbare, Rashid Walker, Romeo Doubs, Matt Orzech, Zane Anderson, Sean Ryan, Malik Willis, Christian Watson. I think they would move on from Kingsley, Doubs, Ryan Willis without really blinking. Christian is just a mystery box to me at this point. Dude, is like Zane Anderson number two, number three?
I didn't put Zane Anderson in my most recent 53-man prediction, by the way. It was a little bit controversial. I love Zane. So I think he's going to make the team or whatever. I just am like, I found other uses for the spot and I'm like, I can live without Zane if need be, but I really like him. I think he'll make it. He's also like 29. He's going to be like 29. He's older actually.
Oh, he's an LDS kid, right?
He is 28 years old right now. He will turn 29 in January.
Okay. I have my tears.
Okay. Number Zach one. Tom's one.
Zach Tom, number two, Quay Walker, number three. These are cheap special teamers that you can just keep around and not have to expend mental energy for. That is Zane Anderson and Matt Orzech.
Okay.
I guess, what was this? 5-6 is like, you could be a starter on, like, starter and difference maker. I don't know if I want to pay you that money. We'll see what you look like in 2025. And that tier to me is Rashid Walker and Christian Watson. And then after that, I think it's guys who will probably end up being backups, at least toward the end of the year, that don't really have a lot of special teams value. And that would be Kingsley Enagbare, Romeo Doubs, Sean Ryan, Malik Willis. I mean, we'll see what happens. Maybe those guys come back on cheap contracts, but I don't expect them to get a lot. I think it would be like an AJ Dillon type of deal if they do end up returning to Green Bay.
Even Romeo Doubs you'd put in that category? That's the only one that kind of surprises me.
I mean, with all the receivers that they got and all these guys are on the contract. That's a
different conversation to me, though. If it's just like, hey, we have enough wide receivers, we don't need to spend an exorbitant contract on Romeo Doubs, go let him get paid somewhere else. That I understand. That logic I'm wholeheartedly in agreement on. I don't see him, though, as a backup wide receiver. I think he's a legitimate top three on most
teams. Yeah, I guess that's fair.
On most teams. Maybe not all, but most.
We'll see how much Matthew Golden ends up playing this year. I think that'll decide a lot of how much playing time Romeo Doubs ends up getting.
And if Wicks can catch the ball, and if when Watson comes back, and a few other things as well. There just does seem to be a little bit more of a connection between Love and Doubs than maybe some of the other guys. So I'm interested to see if that manifests itself in any way, or if it just ends up being, ooh, I have new shinier toys and I want to play with those ones instead. And I could easily see it just being that case as well. We'll be right back.
I think the injuries too, at least in the context of giving out a new contract or how you view these guys as priorities and stuff like that. Like, the Packers want to operate in a signing bonus world, and I just don't know how much, you know, they want to sign guys to 4-year contracts, big signing bonuses, no guarantees after that. I don't know if you want to be the team that is like, we will spend the biggest signing bonus in the NFL to lock down Romeo Doubs on a 4-year contract, considering his concussion history and stuff. Like,
fair point.
Yeah.
I think I'm at the point right now where I'm working on Zach Tom. I'm figuring out if we can get something done there. And I think everyone else, to me, I want to see how you play in 2025 and how things go. Not only just how they play in 2025, but like how the rest of the players around them play in 2025 before I make any long term. If you wanted to make the argument for Quay, I'm certainly understanding of it. I wouldn't have any major.
The only thing about Quay, because I will say, if you look at the pros and cons of stuff, right? Outside of Quay not playing well, right? I guess the other con is he plays too well and his price goes too high. The linebacker market isn't really that high for off-ball linebackers.
That's fair.
With that being said, if you want to keep him from hitting the open market, the franchise tag is based off of all linebackers, not just off-ball linebackers. So the negative there is he plays too well. In a world where we have off-ball and, you know, edge and interior defensive line designation, you would hit him with a franchise tag. But in this world, it's just linebacker, DN, D-tackle, and it's based off of whatever you're listed at on the roster, right? For, like, NFL.com, you can't franchise tag Quay Walker. So he ends up in free agency, and he walks, and you got to figure out who the heck is going to end up playing. I mean, I guess it'd be Isaiah McDuffie next to Edgerrin Cooper. And I just don't need that much Isaiah McDuffie defense on in my diet right now. So I would prioritize Quay, especially with the way that they talked about it. And they were like, you know, we're going to get a deal done with him some way. I do think the linebacker lack of designation, I guess. Like, there's no difference between 3-4 pass rushers like Micah Parsons or something like that, or an off-ball guy like Quay Walker. I think that has a bigger, way bigger impact for the franchise tag than it does the fifth-year option. And we heard Goot complain about that with the fifth-year option. It's really not that big of a difference money-wise. If they wanted to use the fifth-year option on Quay Walker, it would have basically been in line with like the Jermaine Sherwood contract and stuff like that, that guys signed, you know, Nick Bolton, you know, these non-Pro Bowl, non-star, but, you know, average starters coming off of rookie deal contract linebackers that signed in free agency this past year. So I'm actually a little bit surprised Quay Walker didn't get the fifth year option, to be totally honest.
I certainly could have made an argument for it. And I would, if they did it, I wouldn't have had any major qualms with it. I think it would have been understandable given the situation. Can see why they didn't, but I would have had no issues if they ultimately did. All right. A couple other ones really quick. Ed Policy's comments to the media, anything? I know obviously the moving from Green Bay and the, you know, LaFleur and Goody contracts and things like that took the majority of the oxygen, but anything stand out to you?
The Green Bay thing is good, and I don't think anyone thinks it's good. And all we heard was backlash about, like, how dare you even acknowledge that? He should be hyper-focused. Like, if you want to keep the Packers in Green Bay, that has to be something you're mindful of.
Yep.
And a lot of, not every decision you make, but a lot of the decisions you make, man. Like, okay, the Lakers just sold, right? The Lakers were valued by, okay, let's go before that. The 49ers just sold, okay? Or at least got a valuation. This is going to be bad radio right now.
You're fine. We're good.
Okay. Forbes list. You ever heard of it?
I have.
Okay. So, the 49ers valuation. So, the Niners were listed by Forbes to have a valuation of $6.8 billion in 2024. Based off of their most recent sale of 6.2% this offseason, the 49ers are now valued at $8.5 billion, which is the highest valuation of any franchise globally ever. And then the Lakers got a valuation of like $10 billion. And the Lakers were at 7.1. So for Forbes. So between those two sales, valuations of franchises shot way up. Way, 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 way up. Which means there are fewer individuals who can buy this, which means there's fewer I guess they call them like ownership groups that can, yeah, that can buy these teams. And the way that these, the way that things operate now is off of valuation, right? Billionaires aren't buying NFL teams to make money off of NFL teams. They're buying NFL teams because the franchise valuations continue to balloon like crazy. Yep. And at the end of the tunnel, they're going to sell it off and make a whole ton of money, or their children are going to sell it off or whatever. Cause there's only so many of these franchises to go, cause it's an illegal cartel and it's not really protected by, you know, American standards, which is why the NFL, every single time, you know, the players threaten to hold out games and decertify the union, are like, we got to cover our asses. Cause what we're doing is like technically illegal in the United States of America. We don't have the exemption that the MLB has, and they're the only people that really have an antitrust exemption, sports or otherwise. And it's because Congress decided one day, like, well, we like baseball, so we're going to protect it. Football didn't get that. Money is going to be increasingly important. We talked about a couple of weeks ago, the Cleveland Browns have spent like $400 million more than the Pittsburgh Steelers over the last 5 years. Cash money just for players, right?
Yep.
You can theoretically, you know, signing bonuses can stretch out through 5 years, right?
Yep.
In theory, you can take 5 years of NFL salaries, pay it right now, stretch out those cap hits down the line, and that's just debt that you can hold forever, right? So you can, yep, NFL salary cap right now is probably, let me look it up. NFL salary cap right now is $278 million. Let's time that by five. So we're talking about $1.4 billion that you can go into. You can pay up front right now, yep, and then put that debt on the cap. And people say, okay, well, you have to pay that off eventually. No, you don't. There's no due date on this. You can just have that number hang out forever and then just keep pushing it forward. There's a limit on to how much debt you can take on from a salary perspective, basically. But there's no due date. You never actually have to pay that off. And that's what Jimmy Haslam and the Cleveland Browns have. That's kind of been their mentality, to just kind of like push through this. The team that paid the second most amount of cash for players over the last 5 years was the San Francisco 49ers, who just sold off 7% of their team. And their owner is like, we got to stop spending so much cash, pump the brakes on some of this stuff. And he said that openly and outwardly, right? So teams are starting to do other things to make money, to kind of like fuel the fire of the salaries. We're seeing like the Rams move to LA is a perfect example of this, right? They want to build a second downtown in Los Angeles around the stadium, basically. You're going to have SoFi. It's a dome, which is a big deal because when you have a dome, you can host a bunch of different things year round, whether it's concerts or a basketball,
soccer games, tournament. WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. So they're getting this money. I mean, like NFL Network, I don't know if people know this. Like NFL Network studios are basically like built into the side of SoFi Stadium, if people didn't realize that. And that's a pretty major network, you know, in the United States, you know, viewership wise and all that stuff. So teams are having to get creative on like, okay, what are these things on the peripheral that we can build around our football team to also make money for us? Because from just a cash flow perspective, the franchises aren't bringing in the money you would think that owners are paying for. There's no other industry in America that you would pay $10 billion for that is making the revenue that the Los Angeles Lakers are. The purpose of it is at the end of the tunnel, at some point, you're going to sell and you're hoping that you end up selling for $100 billion instead of $10 billion down the line. So when you look at Green Bay, and it's not a big place, and I know there were arguments about this the whole time during the draft and stuff like that, whether, like, is Green Bay a big city? Well, like, you look at, you know, they're, like, top 10% if you're just going population-wise, you know, and you're ranking them top down and stuff like that in the United States, right? For if you're including towns and all that stuff. I would point people to CSA numbers, which are basically like metro areas. 75% of America is living in a metro area larger than Green Bay, which I think is important to look at because you're looking at Green Bay. Well, I guess like Green Bay, Appleton, the combo of it, right? As like the economic center of that area, right? Yep. There's not as much money to pull in from those peripherals, right, in Green Bay as there is in Los Angeles or New York or anything like that. Like Beyonce and Jay-Z aren't headlining a concert in Green Bay in the winter like they would in a dome stadium in Los Angeles, correct, right? Which is not to say that's a bad thing, right? I want to say that on the, like, again, I grew up in middle of nowhere Oregon, right? I've pressure washed manure off of farm equipment before for money, if you can believe it. Like, I'm not one of these hoity-toity white glove people. But there are some things in Green Bay that are different than other NFL cities, man. So when Ed Policy comes out and is like, this is a very important thing to me, I want to keep the team in Green Bay, and people are like, this is a PR gaffe. Like, how dare he even think otherwise? And I'm like, it's good that you're getting events like the draft and like these soccer games, and it's proof of concept that people can come in from not just
the Green Bay area because you don't have the hotel infrastructure to host this stuff. But all of Wisconsin in its entirety, when you're doing things like building kind of like the tech stuff that they're building around in Green Bay, right? We want to bring in talent and stuff like that. And maybe that'll increase the tax pool and things and create more jobs in the area and things like that. Like you got to get a little bit more creative. And it should be like an ever-present thought in your head that it's like, dude, if we're not paying attention to this, this can turn south, which is not to like scare fans or anything like that. It's just like we're living in a little bit of a different reality than a team set up in Nashville that's going to get a dome very soon from taxpayer money and is going to host a bunch of events because people love flying into Nashville. That's just not the situation that's happening in Green Bay this second. Maybe it can happen further down the line, but building all that peripheral stuff and making it easier to host non-Packers events, it would go a long way for keeping the team there. And they've taken steps toward that, and it's time to continue to build through that. And again, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't know why people took it as a negative thing. I really don't.
Everything you said was very positive. It was one of those things that got, I think, misconstrued or, you see it on the forefront, and I immediately made a meme about it, but it just, you see it on the forefront. And you're like, wait, why are we talking about this? I pulled up an article from Fox 11 from 2017, and Mark Murphy basically used the exact same talking points at that point in time. This is when they were building the Titletown District and was going through building the Titletown District, keeping the team in Green Bay and building the Packers more within the community and building those, you know, kind of on roads into the community and things like that. So these are very similar talking points that the Packers have had for a very long period of time. They understand the effort that it takes to kind of keep things all rolling and trending in that direction. Everything continues to point very well in that direction, that Green Bay is very financially soluble and then they can continue to do this stuff and remain in Green Bay, but it should never be taken for granted. And it's everything he said was a positive thing and everything that I'd want him to continue to focus on. Not to mention, he said he's not going to meddle. He wants to continue to open the lines of communication. Everything I heard was a very positive thing from him.
Two more things. One thing, we know what the Packers reserve money is, right? It's been built up for 100 years. You could say that, you know, at some point they probably needed money and they were probably in the hole, right? But I'm just going to use that as an example. 100 years, they built up $500 million. And the problem with big numbers is people hear it and they're like, it might as well be like 11 billion, 1,000 billion, right? Like it just sounds like a fake number, but these numbers matter, right? Because you can look at $500 million. Okay, what the heck does $500 million even look like? Andy, I'm never going to get close to touching $500 million. But we can look at what the Browns are doing and say, okay, the Browns are paying $400 million more than the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's only over a four-year period. And the salary cap's only going to go up, which means that their ability to take on debt is only going to be able to go up, right? It might get to a point where the Packers aren't going to be able to compete financially with the reserves that they have and with the cash flow that they have right now. That's not the scenario that they're in right now. And I think the Cleveland Browns are a great example of this. Of you can look at them and be like, well, they spent all the money and they didn't get anything back for it in return, right? I don't think there's a one-to-one yet in terms of spending to results in like the same way like you would get it in like the English Premier League or like pick whatever soccer league you baseball, want to talk about or baseball too. Right. But there is a world that can happen. So you got to prepare for that world to happen. So that's one thing. The other thing too is cash infusion is going to be interesting. The NFL hasn't taken Saudi money yet. They haven't allowed, what do they call them? Foreign investment funds, I believe is what they call it. The NFL or the NBA has approved foreign investment funds. There are interesting ways to get around foreign investment funds. I don't know if you have you been watching any of the Club Soccer World Cup?
I have.
So like the interesting thing there is who was the middleman? Who's the big sponsor for it?
For the Club World Cup?
Yeah.
I don't know, to be honest. I know that it's all like half, like three quarters of the games are on some stupid online DAZN network that I'm too lazy to go and watch.
Oh, DAZN? See, I'm used to that from boxing.
Okay. Yeah.
So, crap. I can't remember what this is. So, essentially what happened is the Club World Cup didn't want to take money from the Saudis, basically. But what they did is the Saudis gave it to the largest sponsor, and then the largest sponsor gave it to FIFA. So it's not directly through.
You're telling me FIFA would go through a back channel?
If you can believe it.
You're telling me FIFA would go through a back channel? I don't believe it for a second, Justice. Not for 1 minute would FIFA do anything that wasn't completely, totally on the books and of record. No way.
Right. So this is all to say, right, and I don't want to get geopolitical stuff, right? But basically, like, the Saudis got a lot of money. Oil is going to run out eventually. They got to figure out what to do with this cold, hard cash. So one of the best investments that they're seeing is sports, because it takes so much money to invest in a sports team that there's a lot of people who are simply priced out of it.
Sure.
Right? But at the same time, it's an amazing investment, because no one's making, at least in America, right? No one's making new teams, right? Everyone seems to be set on this amount of teams. We're going to make this amount of money, and our franchise valuation goes through the roof year over year, right? So it'll be interesting to see if they figure out a way to get around that and give cash infusions to some of these franchises, which they could then use cash on hand and spend that money, right? I mean, we haven't seen that with the Niners. Like, I think the Niners just wanted more cash on hand, and we're like, yeah, we'll sell off a bit of it and keep the rest, so that we can viably keep the rest of the franchise under the York family, who is, you know, sure, they're the people who own it. After spending all this money over the past couple seasons, we didn't see the Niners like sell part of the team so that they could get a bunch of cash, so that they could sign a bunch of players, kick a bunch of money into the future, and just like juice the roster that they have right now. But that is a possibility that is out there, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Again, like, the Packers trying to figure out ways to make more money, you know, knock on wood, in a way that doesn't hurt other things in the community and stuff like that, so that they're viable no matter what the NFL looks at like in the future, and they can keep the team in Green Bay, is not a bad thing. And totally, I need people to realize that is not – that is not a bad thing at all. Again,
get that second sledding hill going before you run out of money. Get it up now. All right, I have one last one for you before I get you out of here. Imagine the Packers are in the same situation as the Indiana Pacers, and that Jordan Love has a calf issue in the NFC Championship game, and you've got a Super Bowl scenario, and Jordan Love's could be in serious risk of popping an Achilles, but it's the Super Bowl game. You might not ever get back there. Jordan wants to play in the game. It's the Super Bowl. You playing him, or is it Malik Willis time? We'll be right back.
Ball players are going to play ball if you give them the opportunity. Ultimately,
yep.
And like, so Jordan's a Kobe stan.
Do you take that out of the like equation for Jordan?
I'm not a doctor, man. I can't. What I will say, like, he will play. Those guys will play.
Yep.
Right or wrong, like, that's just. I mean, I saw people saying like Haliburton should have sat and like all this stuff, and I'm like,
there's no way.
I do not think you realize how these guys are wired. You're not. You're not rooted in reality if you think that guy's going to sit out a game seven. That is not going to happen, dude. Wake up. Like, what world do you think you live in? Super unfortunate. I mean, just absolutely
brutal.
Crazy.
Absolutely brutal.
I was out on a walk with my friend's got small kids and stuff like that. So, I was pushing him on the swing, trying to get him as high as I possibly could. And then I came back into the house and was like, all right, time to watch game seven, open up my app. And I was like, he blew out his Achilles, and then immediately ran to Tyler Brook, who's Indiana native Pacers fan. I was just like, don't do it. Don't do it, Tyler. Don't do it. You have so much to live for.
That is,
he woke up today, one of the most, still as sad as ever. Like, just a brutal thing. A thing that in retrospect you can look at and be like, maybe that was preventable. I'm sure an ankle sprain didn't help his medical case. I don't know how much you
could put. So here was the situation, allegedly. This is my understanding of it. He had a calf strain, or so he had a like Achilles tendonitis. It turned into a calf strain, and he went into game 6 and 7, well knowing that like the odds of doing exactly this were high. Now, I'm not saying like better than 50% or anything like that, but like there was a real.
But I think that's the problem, right? Is we can't put a number to like, we can't.
Right.
It's hard to say things are bad gambles when you don't know what the actual odds are.
Cause yeah, you can't, right? I mean, I don't think there's an actual like odds you can put on it. Right. And I think
that's your point.
Right. But like, even I know that I going into game 6, I had a hard time like not watching every time he cut and just being like, oh, don't cut that aggressively. Like I was just so worried that it was just going to pop. And then he gets through game 6 and I'm like, okay, like maybe he can get through game 7. You know, they can get him like 25 minutes in this thing and he can make it through. And then just when it, like he was starting to like cut again, and I'm like, I was starting to feel like, okay, maybe he's going to make it through this. Snap. And I'm like, oh, and he knew right away. I mean, he knew exactly what happened immediately.
I mean, everyone who does it says, you know, immediately, because you have no control of your ankle. It's just like, it's like a rock in a sock, basically. Like you got no control.
It's insane. Sports are a jerk. That has to be the single, like, it's amazing to think about how much better things would be for the Pacers if they just lost game 6. Like if they just lost game 6, you don't have to go to game 7.
We've seen, and look, we've kind of brought this up in the past, but like guys are getting so many reps on them at such a young age.
Yeah.
Like I have friends who work in scouting in the NBA, not because I'm like in all these scouting circles. It's because they're Packers fans. They follow my stuff.
Love it.
But I have a buddy who, you know, he told me, he was like, dude, you go through these medicals and stuff, and like a 19-year-old's ankle when they've been playing AAU basketball and they're playing 8 games in a weekend. Like these guys are coming in with some wear on them, and we're starting to see it too with, you know, all the camps for football, whether it's like 7-on-7 or like the lineman camps and stuff like that. Like again, like you peak at 25. And then it starts to decline now. Like it used to be, people talked about like 30. It's 25 now. And then there's big, big walls at like 28 and 30. And then if you've made it by that point, it's like hats off to you. You probably had elite athleticism that you had room to give and are probably given at that point. And football has 100% injury rate. So like everyone's pulling their hair out about injuries and stuff like that. It's like, Doc, I don't know if you have looked around. Everyone's getting bigger, faster, training more than ever. Like, injuries are going to skyrocket and go through the roof. Like, that's a...
Because you can't get to that level era without doing it. And, like, it's hard to, like, make AAU teams. It's hard to make select soccer teams unless you're doing it full-time at age 11, 12. I've seen it, firsthand.
No, like, I believe it. Like, last spot I was coaching at, because, again, I'm from middle of nowhere in the sticks, right? But I coached out here in Portland, and I know this was during the pandemic. So this was, so our season got pushed in 2020. We started playing February 2021. Okay. But there's not middle school ball out here. So it's all youth club up until high school. We would play games on a Friday night, and our head coach was like, yeah, I have to go back. Like I have to go to sleep immediately, because I have to get back out, and like at 9 o'clock, they're going to have kickoffs for the youth games. And I'm like, why are you going to these, you know, 7th and 8th grade youth games? And he's like, cause the other coaches at the private high schools near us, I'm not going to name names, are out here and they're like recruiting our kids. And I was like, dude, there's no way, dude, this guy's just being a nervous wreck or something. I ended up going to one of them and just like, I think we had to like park our cars by like the fence and like watch the game, because we couldn't even be like in the stands or anything. sure is crap. Like, there's grown ass men scouting middle school football players, and I'm like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Not be our best use of time. The other thing too, I think, is just in general, parents putting so much damn pressure on these kids, man. I saw a poll that came out of Utah State. This was a couple weeks ago. I saw a poll out of Utah State that said 9% of, or 11% of parents, because it was 1 out of 9, 11% of parents think their kids are going to go pro in a sport, and something like 25% think their kids are going to go D1. That's crazy. Hoo-wee, dog. Like, again, as someone who's worked in personnel and pro football and stuff like that, has a lot of friends in college ball, all that stuff, have coached high school ball. Like, dog, that is just not realistic, man. Yep. That is not realistic.
It is a wild world of sports out there, and there's a lot of money that is in it as well. So there's that whole aspect also. Yeah. It's crazy. Good news to just bring this back and to finish things up. No NFL players are going to be still good past the age of 25 eventually, which is a good timing because the Packers already live in the youngest roster and draft and develop, and they're not going to have money down the road to spend any money like we talked about earlier. So it works out perfect. The Packers can continue to be the youngest team in the league year over year, draft and develop. They're just getting ahead of the curve, as all these second contracts aren't going to be worth anything anyway, because these players are all going to be torn up by age 26.
Yeah. Trey Hendrickson, I'm so sorry, dude. Rest in peace. Old man.
Very old man at this point. All right, Justice, I know you got to get out of here. I know it's the off season for you, but anything you got coming up for Acme Packing Company, or anything you want to plug on the way out?
Whatever inspires me.
Deal.
It is June 23rd when we're recording this. Whatever inspires me.
I love that. That's the best way to operate, and that's usually when the best stuff comes out. So I know we'll be looking forward to it. Find him on social media at JUMOSQ, over at acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.